bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by FanDuel Sportsbook, NFL Week 15, Monday Night Football Edition, although I guess this could classify as a Tuesday Night Football Edition and a variety of other things, given some of the schedule reshuffling. I'm your host, Todd Furman, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague and co-host, and want to remind all of you, our loyal listeners, if you haven't already done so, this football season now is the perfect time to go to FanDuel.com/BetTheBoard. Take advantage of your $1,000 risk-free bet, all sorts of enhanced odds. You know you're home for the holidays. You know you're going to be betting the NFL, bowl games, and everything else that's available to you. Why not let FanDuel help you build your bankroll to get into action? And Payne, when we broke shop Thursday afternoon, we had no idea the NFL schedule was going to be thrown into complete upheaval, but much to the chagrin of our listeners, we are not going to deep dive all of the other games still remaining other than Monday Night Football here on this very show.
It's a shit show. And as we speak, Kevin Stefanski also did not test out of the Big C. So will be interesting to see what that means for the Browns play calling tonight. Everything that's gone on with the Raiders Browns for this evening, to my knowledge, right? The guys that I speak with, the information that I see, no one's actually taken like true positions on this game. It's all beating the market, right? Like, you are able, and this is why we always talk about it, if you are sitting in front of a computer and you're getting this information and you have your beat writers set up within your Twitter account, you can get out ahead of this by 30 seconds, right? And at that point, it should take 7 or 8 seconds to bet a game. But what I have seen throughout this course was, you know, Raiders +6 when the news first broke, you know, about a week ago that this was a problem. And then when they moved the game, or there was potential for the game to be moved, Browns +4.5 came in. And so ultimately you have guys playing both sides of this game, and I haven't seen a true position based upon the guys that I've spoken with on this game yet. But ultimately I think the Raiders are going to close a favorite here, especially with Stefanski, who calls the plays, not getting out of protocol.
And the craziest thing about all this, it all depends on which books you've bet it with, too. Out here in Nevada, you have house rules that some the game has to be played on the day scheduled. Yep. Others, you have 7 to 8 days. So there are some folks that may have a perfectly good middle still going for them. Others who had both sides of their wager refunded. I mean, yep. An absolute clusterfuck in the truest sense of the word when you look at how this has gone. But there's no doubt by the time this podcast goes live, kickoff will be about 90 minutes to 2 hours away. So I'm not sure it's worth belaboring the point. As far as the Seahawks
correct
and
me if
Rams,
I'm wrong, by the way.
Sure, fire away.
The Westgate, they are ones that allow a week, correct?
Yep, it's eight days for the Westgate, yeah. Days for William Hill Caesars, day of for stations.
Yes.
Trust me, dude, I had to do a deep dive on all of it, and the worst part is with some of these mobile apps, you can't even find the damn house rules.
So specific to them, we obviously, like, there was a pretty large position that was meaningful that came in last Monday on the under 43.5. But then based upon those house rules, Westgate got down to 35.5 when there were some rumors of the game being rescheduled. But because they are the 8-day policy, they did not last at 35.5 very long, because guys were taking a free shot at the middle and said 35.5 simply isn't going to last. If it gets rescheduled, a lot of these guys are going to be back up. So, you know, not just getting numbers, but numbers specific to places based on the rules was transpiring as well this week.
It's simply wild, and I know this is a can of worms we didn't want to open up as it pertains to the industry as a whole, but I was always brought up under the school of thought that you lived and died by the house rules. Whatever was in black and white, that's how things were going to be adhered to. They'd been in place for a while. We obviously didn't have the kind of extenuating circumstances we've gone through over the last 2 years with major golf and tennis tournaments being rescheduled 6 months later and a variety of things. But I get the feeling now that some of the new age operators that are out there, I tried to get clarity on one book that's in a number of regulated jurisdictions, Payne. I talked to two journalists in this space that I respect more than anybody else. They couldn't even give me the same answer in terms of what was going on. And it's simply wild that this is where we are now, and it's why we always warn our listeners, and whether it's the first time listening to the podcast or they've been with us since day one, make sure you know the black and white, make sure you protect yourself in all of this. It's hard enough to outrun 11 to 10. It's even harder to outrun it when it's a full-blown moving target.
That's spot on. They frustrating times, let's just put it that way, in the space. And not going to say I didn't see it coming, but I fully envisioned that with more competition, they would allow bettors with an edge to partake a little bit more in the space. So I don't love the way things are trending, although there was a nice break out west with some new takeover. I know Caesars is now taking a bet.
Yeah, one of my old mentors handling their risk floor, basically yes. Saying, come one, come all, we're not backing down from bets.
Yeah,
and I applaud him to that.
Transitioned, yes. Been a very, very good out recently for us.
And we've had those discussions, obviously, with John, as we do every Thursday. I mean, it's not just the guys that have to bear the brunt of it on the risk floor. Sometimes it's corporate policy and everything else. And, I mean, I know what I dealt with when I was at Caesars behind the counter, that we could take a five-figure bet pain from some of the sharpest people in the NFL, but the running joke industry-wide was we weren't going to move on that bet. We had to wait till Mirage or Westgate or somebody else took a bet. And it drove me batshit crazy to the point that I would get called into my boss's office for taking a $40 bet 6 months in advance on a Kentucky Derby future that wasn't brought to my attention until after that horse had gone on to win the Derby. Meanwhile, some of the knucklehead colleagues I had throughout our network were taking bigger bets from some of the sharpest runners in the industry. And the interesting part now that I'm on the other side of the counter and I know a lot of those guys, they love to bust my balls nonstop about what went on those days.
You allowed a $40 ticket on a Derby winner? When did that pay out?
I think it was, I'll have another, I don't know, right around two dimes maybe, you know, 50 to 1, wow, thereabouts. And I get called in with this giant dot matrix printer sheet where my boss goes, I can't believe you took that bet. You know, we were supposed to cap it. And I kind of looked at my boss. I didn't have a ton of, you know, creative liberties then, because if I was out of a job, it was going to be a real problem. I kind of looked at him like he had three eyes going, wait a second. So if it's 50 to 1, what do you want me to take? $10 on it? Like, is this the day and age we're in? And this was before. And again, I've talked about this. There are very few people that I don't ever care to see again in my life. My old boss from Caesars would be one of them. And there's a reason he's no longer in the industry.
It's the only human that you've ever talked poorly about publicly. That's
and
it.
He probably will be the only human that I ever talked poorly about. Whereas my mentor in the space now runs one of the other shops out here, and there was a reason he left to try and take other opportunities. But I digress completely. I can go on, and like we talk about all the time when we tease an industry podcast, maybe these are some of the topics we can get into the dog days of April and May, and shed a little bit of light on some of the challenges, trials, and tribulations, and the direction of the space overall. Good, bad, and the ugly is normally where we start on Monday mornings, but I think, Payne, before we get into some of the things, as we don't have a ton of look-ahead action, I don't even know what to take away from Saints-Bucks last night. I know the Bucks lose their three most valuable skill position players in Mike Evans, Godwin, and of course Leonard Fournette, but at the same time, to muster 0 points even against a defense that can be as talented and stretches as the Saints, a little bit problematic for Bruce Arians and company, knowing they could have sealed up the division.
There's no doubt about it. And there was some discussions about open positions and who should be interviewing for them, and Byron Leftwich didn't get an interview last year. Dennis Allen's a guy that we've talked about for years. I mean, he's the reason the Saints went from one of the league's worst defenses to being a huge reason for those Super Bowl runs. It's actually probably Dennis Allen whose time to crack the head coaching industry is probably here, right? And last night he got a good taste being the interim. I don't know if he's going to last very long. That's a guy that I would probably give a ring to, and I hate hiring defensive coordinators as my head coach, but I think he's probably far more deserving than a Byron Leftwich. Now, getting into the game a little bit, I know we broke it down and we dove into, I think, some of the success that Allen had against Tampa Bay and you know, specifically Tom Brady under center with Tampa Bay the last two seasons on the podcast Thursday. you mentioned it, right? Like, it helps when Godwin and Evans and Fournette all go down early in the game, but you could just tell the energy, the effort, the game plan appeared to work well before those three guys went out. The Saints were able to get pressure, which is something that really the Bucs hadn't allowed all season. Cam Jordan was back. Davenport looked better in his second game back. But you're looking at that O-line for the Bucs. They came into the game, they were only allowing 19% pressure rate. Best league by far. You have 16 pressures yesterday. Tom Brady was horrific. And, you know, Tom Brady is the best quarterback ever. And this isn't meant to, you know, disparage him at all. But he does have a little bit of a, you know, front runner mentality in him. There are times where you can see him where the deck is stacked against a little bit and he gets the glossy eyes. And he's, you can kind of just tell it's not going to be that kind of day for him. And that's what it felt like even, you know, middle of the way through the third quarter. But the Bucs gave up 16 pressures. Tom Brady's completion percentage, 13% below expectation. Brady had three turnover worthy throws when he was able to throw from a clean pocket. The backup receivers couldn't get open. And he had just 5 yards an attempt from a clean pocket. So, very interesting game. We'll see what unfolds moving forward. I would think between Godwin, Fournette, and Mike Evans, they will be out at least for the Carolina game coming up. It would appear Antonio Brown will be back for that one. So, that's some level of help there. But it's going to be interesting. It feels more wide open after this week than I initially anticipated. And we talked about the league being wide open for the last couple of weeks. But this, after what transpired this week, it's like, man, so many teams can win it this year.
First time all season, I've seen a couple of books actually move a team above the Bucks to win the NFC, and it's the Green Bay Packers. Interesting dynamics in play there, but you're right. I don't ever remember a season with this much parity where just getting into the tournament may give you a chance in the back half of the playoff picture, whether you're trying to make a case for the likes of maybe the 49ers in the NFC or the Indianapolis Colts in the AFC. I don't think there are any layups, and I think it puts an increased value on getting that number one overall seed in both the AFC and NFC, especially if you have a little weather advantage, geographical things working in your favor, so it should be one hell of a playoff run. But a team, Payne, that obviously caught our eye that wasn't a playoff team, I think you have to give the Detroit Lions a ton of credit. I mean, they went out there and there was nothing fluke-like about their outright win as a 12.5-point underdog against the Arizona Cardinals. They won the rushing battle. They won red zone touchdowns. I mean, Arizona multiple fourth down failures, yards per play even at 5.5. Craig Reynolds with over 100 yards, he's really been a fantasy godsend for those folks that have played him each of the last couple of weeks. And maybe most troubling for Arizona, Kyler Murray's post-game press conference where he says, "We flat out weren't prepared for this game." Not what you want to hear from a guy who's supposed to be the face of your franchise in one of the more important and what should have been a winnable game, suddenly going from not only maybe falling out of the number one seed in the NFC, but losing the division if the Rams get hot and finish with a flourish.
Spot on. And there was some very sharp money early in the week on the Lions. And there was one guy that I respect did play back the Cardinals, I believe minus 12 it was, on game day. What kept me off the game was I thought Jared Goff showed an ability to kind of know that defense, right? He'd seen that variation of Cardinals defense, obviously having played with the Rams, and he was excellent yesterday, right? The best part of the Lions team in general is their O-line, and it's getting a little bit healthier now. So they were able to run the ball with Craig Reynolds, as you mentioned, right? And so what we saw defensively from Arizona is something I've kind of been hinting at now for like multiple weeks, that this is not a top five defense, despite what the metrics tell you. It's very overrated, and they are trending poorly in general. If you go back to like week 8, in terms of EPA, this is a Cardinals defense that's just slightly below average, 18th. And so I don't love the parts when you think about them, right? It's like Chandler Jones is awesome. Kennard's been pretty good. What are you getting out of your linebackers? Spent a lot of draft capital. Zaven Collins has now been benched. Isaiah Simmons, not that dude. Alford was out. He's 33 years old. Buda Baker is probably the best guy you have in the secondary. Plays safety. It's not really a premium position. Byron Murphy's your best cover corner. He's above average. So when he steps up in class like we saw Monday night against Cooper Kupp, he's going to get killed. And so there's just not a lot of components on that defense that I love. And I envisioned them continuing to trend down, and that's absolutely what happened here. I mean, Goff was excellent. Now, we know he was familiar with that defense, but number one quarterback this week in completion percentage above expectation, number two in EPA per dropback. So he was one of the best quarterbacks of the entire Week 15 card.
Who had any idea, Payne? Jared Goff and a backfield of Craig Reynolds and Duke Johnson were going to help people in the opening round of their fantasy football playoffs to get them where they needed to go with that particular trio while some of the stars struggled. You've been the ringleader in college football of the Stetson Bennett fan club, and that hasn't quite worked out so well for you, but you've also been the ringleader for one NFL quarterback fan club.
He's got his team in the college football playoff.
Yeah,
what
he's got a
bunch.
He's got five-star grown men on the defensive side of the ball, so I'm not giving Stetson full marks. I will, however, allow you to take a victory lap, at least for now, given what we've seen from the starting quarterback wearing 49ers old gold and red.
I mean, there's no reason to do that. Big game Thursday night. Can't count your chickens before they're hatched. But, I mean, listen, this is what Kyle Shanahan's offense is supposed to look like. And it's starting to get a little bit healthier. And he did face an Atlanta defense that's not very good. But it's got a lot of parts when you're looking at the 49ers offense when they're healthy. Like, Kittle's as good as it gets. Ayuk is out of the doghouse and turning into a pretty damn good receiver. And those two guys now allow you to use Deebo Samuel as a runner, as a receiver. You never know where he's going to line up. And I've said this for a long time. Like, Jimmy G can operate this offense, right? This is an offense that, like, he took to the Super Bowl. Like, he was fantastic that year. And I don't know if I said this publicly. I think it was just you, me, and John talking before we recorded his segment on Thursday. I don't think I ever said it, like, on a microphone. Jimmy G has never been the problem. And he might not be elite, and he certainly has some highs and the lows are pretty bad. But for all the hate that he's gotten, I mean, he's top five this season in EPA per dropback plus completion percentage above expectation. And he did get a lot of help yesterday. If you look at some of the yards that were gained, 62% of the yards were after the catch. But you have to put balls in perfect position, right? You have to get it out there accurately so your guys can run after the catch. And Jimmy
Don't tell
G
that
did
to
that.
Drew Locke. Don't tell that to Drew Locke.
Oh, boy. Bad. His Jimmy G's completion percentage above expectation was the eighth best of the week. Now, huge game here against Tennessee. The Niners took some early money there, but that's a game that they need to win to prove that you're an actual contender in the NFC. Ultimately, when I look at the 49ers, what's going to be their undoing, I think, is actually the other side of the ball. It's their secondary. That's the part of that unit and that team That really concerns me, and I think ultimately would be the reason the 49ers can't actually make a Super Bowl run is that secondary.
Can they do enough in terms of their defensive line? Obviously, early in the year, we saw them come close to beating the Green Bay Packers at home. Going to be much more difficult if you have to go on the road to Raymond James against Tampa, assuming their weapons are healthy, or go to Lambeau in frigid temperatures. But can they do enough to negate some of their deficiencies in the back end with their ability to generate pressure? Or do you think that, you know, when you get that late in the year and you're playing quarterbacks that are that veteran late and they're going to be able to scheme a game plan to put those guys on islands?
Yeah, that's the problem, right? The matchup yesterday was, hey, we're against one of the worst offensive lines in football with the Atlanta Falcons. And so, matchup-wise, when they face a above-average O-line, suddenly that becomes a concern because you're not able to get after the quarterback at the rates we saw yesterday. And your point is when you do step up in class against quarterbacks that can get the ball out quickly and accurately, it becomes a little bit of a different game. Now, I thought Matt Ryan, all season, I think Matt Ryan's performed better than some of the metrics indicate, better than a lot of people think. I mean, he has been the most hit quarterback in the NFL, and I think I've told you via text, if I'm Sean Payton, like, I'm going to knock on the door of the Atlanta Falcons and say, you know, we know Matt Ryan's a little bit older. We know your organization's going in a little bit of a different direction. I doubt they would trade him within the division, but God forbid the Saints had him. They would make a run for the next 2 or 3 years, I think. I still think Matt Ryan's got some good football left in him, and this year he's proven that, despite being just absolutely hit on virtually every dropback.
I mean, there are going to be some jobs that are quite interesting for the likes of Matt Ryan and Jimmy Garoppolo always stay in this game, whether it's Denver, whether it's Pittsburgh, whether it's the Saints, like you mentioned, a couple of teams out there that have all the pieces that just may be a quarterback away. So while we've talked about this being one of the wildest off seasons for college football as far as the transfer portal, there may be a couple NFL teams that aren't going out there and getting a guy that is going to be truly elite, but can significantly upgrade the quarterback position and put them in a spot to make a run.
Yeah, if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers, if you're the Denver Broncos, there are certainly pieces that you have as a team that doesn't necessarily indicate you would have to rebuild, just go out and get the most important position settled, and you'll be extremely competitive. And I do believe Matt Ryan has 2 to 3 good years of football left in him. I've been really impressed when you really think about learning a brand new offense, the parts that he has. I mean, your best weapon's a rookie tight end, one of the most difficult positions to learn. And they're lining him up out wide. Certainly Russell Gage has come on, and then Cordarrelle Patterson's been a pleasant surprise. But in general, one of the worst offensive lines. I think your parts in terms of weapons is still below a league average. And you're learning a brand new system with a head coach that is probably in a little bit over his head.
Oh, it's always wild to see when you get some of these guys that obviously if you don't get protected, you have big problems in front of you. But that is the nature of the beast in this business, and what quarterbacks need some of the surrounding supporting cast to truly realize their potential. In terms of other things that stood out to you in a positive fashion over the weekend, Payne, the floor is yours. I'm curious to get your take.
I think we go to Saturday night, and if it wasn't for this unit, we're probably a little bit lighter in our pockets this morning. But I think you give credit to Matt Eberflus, who came up with a really solid game plan, obviously had 2 weeks to come up with something to prepare for a rookie quarterback in Mac Jones. But what was interesting to me is the defense changed a little bit. It was clear the Colts incorporated far more man coverage concepts, something we had said, hey, like, you know, they play a little soft in their coverage. We don't necessarily love that all the time. It's not an overly aggressive defense. And they changed that up. Far more man coverage. The Colts blitzed at a 11% higher rate than their season-long average. Everything was just more aggressive defensively. And then through three quarters, Mac Jones had the sixth worst EPA of any quarterback in Week 15. Obviously, got it going a little bit in the fourth quarter, and the Colts had an ability to blow a 20-0 lead heading into that quarter, mostly because the offense was doing nothing. Frank Reich got a little conservative, and then when your top weapon in Pittman gets ejected for something that was absolutely ridiculous, there wasn't much punch to the offense at that point, and the defense started to wear down a little bit. But ultimately, the first three quarters, Matt Eberflus confused Mac Jones, and you have to give him credit for coming up with a game plan that I would say McDaniels and the Patriots didn't really expect.
I'll say one thing watching that game. Darius Leonard is probably the best defensive player that doesn't get talked about enough as far as major media is concerned or some of the casual football fans that are out there because he plays in a smaller market.
He's been fantastic. There's no doubt about that. Now, did give up the touchdown to Hunter Henry there. Perfect pass from Mac Jones. Yeah, I mean, he has been a ball hawk. We know his versatility because he can go sideline to sideline, and he's been battling an ankle injury all season, had some off-season surgery on that ankle, and just hasn't quite recovered yet. So getting the 2 weeks, both him and Buckner, was certainly beneficial. Buckner was really the only guy that was able to get some semblance of pressure on Mac Jones. Not a lot of pressure created from that unit. But yeah, I think you definitely give props to Darius Leonard. He's just been an absolute turnover machine. And I think that's kind of the reason, you know, we did see some money late on New England. There was a couple number grabbers that do have some respect. And then you had, you know, 65% of the tickets, which I typically do not look at. But come game time, when you see that kind of move, we anticipated some of the how can Belichick be a dog, I have to take him element to this game. And we did see some more of the tickets on New England. And when you have a standalone game like that on Saturday night, we anticipated that line coming a little bit further down. I got to tell you, my assessment of where that line was going changed kind of in the middle of the week. Like we got out ahead and laid it with the Colts early in the week. And then once it like didn't get to three, or as soon as it got to three at one shop, there was a bye and it lasted seconds. I was like, man, I kind of think this might not get back to three now. And ultimately, like, the public's going to come in and kind of take this line down a little bit. So I know we got some comments from our listeners that said, hey, it was a good call waiting on the money line because I saved about 10 or 15 cents.
Oh, and I got a few texts from people panicked going, lines don't normally move against you guys when you give it out and from 2.5 to 1.5, not through key numbers. But it is always interesting because oftentimes, even in the NFL, the last move can typically be right. But to your point, this was the only NFL game that took place on Saturday. So anybody that waited until the final 15 minutes, books had no reason to try and keep their neck out there, given that a predominant amount of public tickets came in on the underdog in that spot. Wasn't sure if there was anything else that stuck out to you in a positive fashion from the weekend, or we can happily transition into what we saw unfold at Heinz Field Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, lead us there. What a game that was. Ugh.
You want to talk about a wrong side winner? The Pittsburgh Steelers were the definition of what it's like to bet the wrong side in a football game, but still be able to cash a ticket. Outgained 318 to 168 on the afternoon. 12 first downs for the Steelers. 3.7 yards per play. They ran the football 17 times for 35 yards. They were 1 of 3 on red zone drives. And while they forced 4 turnovers, which is great, the Steelers gained a grand total of 58 total yards on the ensuing drives. From that, Chris Boswell gets the MVP, and a Steelers defense that had been much maligned did what they needed to, created short fields, because it didn't look like Big Ben and company were going to be able to move the football.
You shouldn't win games at home with 10 days to prepare with your playoff lives on the line, churning out 160 yards of total offense. The Steelers were the team that didn't make mistakes. That's basically what this came down to. They were able to protect the ball. You know, Big Ben was terrible, but he didn't turn it over. And that was huge. Boy, was Big Ben bad. I'm looking at this now. Completion percentage, 15% below expectation. All game, treated the ball like a hot potato, got rid of it in 2.1 seconds. We know he usually gets it away pretty quickly, but it's still in that like 2.4 range, even quicker today. We talked about Bud Dupree returning for a big game like this against an old team that didn't want to pay him, and he was able to get some pressure.
They got up close and personal. Yep, they got up close and personal a couple of times.
So if you look at Ben, everything was super short. His completed air yards, 2.8. Not good. That was one of those games where I think I made a joke, like both fan bases are going to hate me because I'm going to kind of shred them. But that's basically what it came down to. Those were two fade teams for us going at it. And we got kind of the slop fest I expected there. And I'm still really trying to figure out who was on that over. Because that went from like 41.5 out to 44. And I was like, you know what? If this gets to 44, I'm probably going to have to hit this under a little bit. And then I got cold feet at the bell. And as I watched the first quarter, I'm like, this thing is just not going to sniff.
Well, I mean, speaking along those lines, I mean, that was a playoff type atmosphere to a certain extent for those teams, but there was a playoff type atmosphere in Denver as well. Another total that took over money. Joe Burrow did nothing to go out there and prove that he was a true franchise quarterback. But you talk about making mistakes. I mean, Payne, I haven't seen a more inept final 5 minutes of a half in a game that was 3-3 all season than what Vic Fangio and company put on the books for the Denver Broncos. And it was kind of a microcosm for everything that transpired in the second half. And for all intents and purposes, we'll keep the Denver Broncos on the outside looking into the AFC playoff picture.
That was a huge game. And obviously, when you're at 3-3, a 6-point swing before the half is massive, not just for confidence, but how that thing entirely played out. I mean, I have no idea what they were doing there before the half.
I don't think they knew.
It's a really poorly coached team overall. Now, Vic is a very good defensive mind. Very good. One of the best. But aside from that, there's really not much going on, and I think ultimately he'll be out of a job. Unless you can find like a great quarterback where you're saying, hey, we're going to give Vic one more year. We like what he's doing with the defense. The young players are coming around. You know, we have a surprise at defensive end. Surtain looks fantastic. And we just have to equip him with the right quarterback and coordinator, because Pat Shurmur stinks as well. He should not be a coordinator in this job. He should be done. So that's really the problem, is offensively you have a poor OC, and then, you know, when Drew Locke enters a game, not the best situation. Now, that was surprising to me, right? And that's kind of the one thing that's really frustrating when you're betting some of these games. You give away 6 points at the end of the first half. And then you get the momentum score that no one saw coming from Drew Lock. You go up 10-9. And the one time Vic Fangio's defense needs a stop, can't get it. Right down the field. And momentum is completely zapped. Yep, two plays. So those are always like the frustrating parts is like, his defense, as weird as it sounds, it's good. It's great in the red zone. But if you look at like the overall numbers, now I know they've been decimated with injuries. It was like slightly below average for the entire season coming into this game. But they're playing a little bit better in recent times because you did get some key cogs along the front seven a little bit healthier. And, you know, the secondary was playing at a pretty damn good level. But it's like the one time your unit needed to stop yesterday, couldn't get it. And then late in the game, too, right? You're down 5 at that point. It's like, you know, we got to get these guys off the field. It's, you know, Joe Burrow took that kind of sack because he wanted time to run. But he had a 2nd and 6. Burrow kind of slides out of the pocket, right? And instead of releasing it and throwing it out of bounds because he wanted to keep the clock churning, he takes a 4-yard loss. You're at 3rd and 10. Can't get off the field. So that's the frustrating part. Like, if you're going to be a defensive guy, that's great. That you didn't give up a ton of points yesterday, only 15. But boy, you couldn't get off the field when it was needed most.
I mean, in this day and age, if you can't win an NFL football game when you only allow 15 points, something is fundamentally wrong on the other side of the ball. We hope that Teddy Bridgewater has a speedy recovery. But for as far as the Broncos' outlook in terms of making the postseason a major blow and with their upcoming schedule, not quite sure they'll be able to get themselves up off the deck with 3 divisional games remaining. Anything else you wanted to highlight in the bad category? Because when it comes to ugly, there was one quarterback performance that I think is definitely worth mentioning.
No, let's get to the ugly.
All right. Mike Glennon, your time has come and your time has passed. I have no idea why the Giants even gave you the start against the Dallas Cowboys. The reality of it is that you may as well see what you have in Jake Fromm. We know he's not a franchise quarterback. We know his arm strength will be questioned. But Mike Glennon at this point in his career isn't even a good placeholder. He's not a Derek Anderson or Chase Daniel that you trust to fill in a pinch. And that was on full display in his performance again yesterday. 13 of 24, 99 yards, 3 interceptions. And I'm not going to sell the Dallas defense short, because I think that's a unit trending up that is now finally getting attention 3 weeks after it should have been, with some of their key cogs back while the offense continues to struggle. But at some point, the Giants have to figure out, may as well see what we have in a younger quarterback, because you know what Glennon is, and he flat out stinks.
Yeah, he's not an NFL quarterback. And I think you hit this perfectly, is that he's not good enough to sneak in an unexpected occasional win when he's called upon. But then he also takes away from a young quarterback, and I'm not saying it's Jake Fromm, but whoever the young quarterback could be that you're grooming on the roster that actually does have upside. So he's got to go at this point. And you asked a random question last week regarding Dallas, and I not so discreetly tipped our hand on what we feel about their defense and the way the Cowboys stop unit is really trending. And if you look at a lot of numbers, at least our weighted numbers, this is the number one defense in the NFL weighted wise. They are coming on and they are getting healthier.
Is that a veiled compliment for Dan Quinn, Payne? Is that what we're getting at here?
I said that last week. You really have to give Dan Quinn some kudos, right? He's figured out how to get his guys going. Obviously, the scheme is going to be better than Mike Nolan's. I think everybody in the world's scheme is better than Mike Nolan's, but he's got some parts too. I mean, he's got 3 bona fide pass rushers. And the interior of the line got a little bit healthier. Cornerbacks are playing pretty damn well. The schedule of opponents overall this season have been fantastic. So this isn't a defense doing it against paper tigers. Like, they are fantastic. And then you did get a horrific offense led by a horrific quarterback in Mike Glennon. And that's how you hold them to 6. I mean, Mike Glennon. Completion percentage 12% below expectation. Glennon had the largest discrepancy between intended air yards and completed air yards of any quarterback in week 15. far and away the worst quarterback this week in adjusted EPA per play, nearly two times worse than the second worst quarterback. So credit Dallas's defense, right? A lot of times we don't do that. And that's the important thing to look at when we are gauging schedule, right? It's not that you just played a poor team, but how did you perform against that poor team? Did you absolutely dominate them, or was it kind of just a middling effort? So there is things predictive even when you play bad teams.
Simply incredible. And we'll see what the Giants elect to do with not only their starting quarterback position going forward, but if Joe Judge will get a third trip around the sun as head coach at MetLife Stadium. But the Dallas Cowboys, no doubt a team that I'm not sure anybody in the NFC wants to see. And part of the reason that that playoff picture has gotten that much more chaotic in recent weeks. So I think we've done a good job of encapsulating the good, the bad, and the ugly for what we've seen so far. As far as NFL Week 15 is concerned, I want to remind all of you, our loyal listeners, to follow Payne on Twitter, at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. Most importantly, follow the podcast, at Bet the Board Pod. And Payne, obviously, with a handful of games still yet to be played this weekend, there aren't a ton to talk about as far as look-ahead numbers, but two games that I wanted to highlight, a team that we talked about a little bit earlier in the San Francisco 49ers. FanDuel's look-ahead number had their trip to Tennessee priced out at a pick'em. The Titans struggled to move the football, or at least to not self-implode, against the Pittsburgh Steelers. The 49ers, a dominant performance against the Atlanta Falcons. And lo and behold, here we are, the 49ers more than a field goal favorite on a short week traveling across the country.
Yeah, I mean, listen, two teams that in the advanced box scores are trending, you know, a little bit differently when we look over like the last four or five games. So that's going to impact this line a little bit, but ultimately price does matter. There was some guys that I saw get out and lay the three in anticipation of where this was going to head. There are some whispers that AJ Brown will be back for this game, so that'll certainly help a Titans offense that has been struggling mightily. I mean, you start to look at how the Titans have survived time without Derrick Henry, and it's, you know, winning a game like they did on the road against the Rams, right? 200-ish yards of offense. And then you get the Jacksonville Jaguars off the bye a week before the full-blown implosion happens with Urban Meyer. A lot of these games right now that the Titans are competing in and winning in, they really have no business doing so. Now, we've kind of mentioned, right, their defense is trending in the right direction a little bit. I believe it was like top five in EPA per play in our weighted metrics over some recent time. But and they were very good again yesterday against the Steelers, obviously hold them to 168 yards. But offensively, it's going to be difficult if AJ Brown is not back in this game to compete with how the 49ers offense is humming right now. But it's a big if. Now, obviously, the price is kind of the one thing that would scare me, right? If I'm running to take the 49ers minus 3.5 in this spot, it's difficult to do that.
Tell you one thing, Titans fans who thought they had this division sealed up, suddenly things get to be a lot more chaotic, and you have to be extremely thankful that you have the tiebreaker against the Indianapolis Colts, knowing an Indy win against Arizona on Saturday night, coupled with a Titans loss, suddenly, you know, things get a lot dicier down the stretch. And speaking of the Arizona Cardinals and Indianapolis Colts, that'll be the game we're treated to on Christmas Day under the lights out in Glendale, Arizona. And the look-ahead number here had the Cardinals a 4 to 4.5 point favorite, depending on where you shopped. Right now, we're seeing that Cardinals price well below the key number of 3, trending towards pick'em at FanDuel Sportsbook.
Yeah, it is trending towards pick'em. We're still at like -1. Some places still -2, but I think we probably get this close to a pick'em here. And, you know, is it some over-exaggeration? I would say so. It's so difficult for me, right? Because in general, for me, the Colts are a buy team. The Cardinals have been a sell team. And so how do you catch that in the midst of a game where your power number doesn't necessarily indicate there's value in the Colts? And I think that's the difficult part. And one thing I kind of have seen over the last couple of weeks is, sure, there are guys that have always played into the look headlines. But now, over the last like 2 or 3 weeks, I'm seeing guys that care about limits play into these to the point where they've set some things up where they're able to get 5, 6, 7K down on a look-ahead line, which is a pretty substantial amount for a look-ahead line. And I believe the Colts were +4.5 some places on the lookout, and that was gobbled last week. They were willing to tip their hand for $6,000 or $7,000, and that's pretty telling. Now, where are we at when this gets to pick? I don't know. I really don't. I'm not really sure what's going on here. I need to evaluate this one a little bit more. Obviously, my line isn't going to indicate this should be pick'em, but I'm kind of selling the Cardinals, but it could be at their floor. You certainly don't like hearing the comments that were made by Kyler after the game, but that's kind of what we have been saying for a long time now, right? This is what Arizona looks like, right, over their last two games in current form, when their defense, which we told you wasn't top five, shows that they're not top five, and we get the backyard football version of their offense. When those two things conjoin, the Arizona Cardinals aren't very good. And then we saw a head coach in Cliff Kingsbury that we thought was heading in the right direction. Well, he had no freaking clue what was going on late in the ballgame, time score situation against the Rams, and then could not get his team prepared against the Detroit Lions. So now we're evaluating that situation as well.
Tell you one thing, if Arizona can't get it figured out coming into the Colts game on Saturday night off two losses, things don't get easier in week 17 either, when they'll travel to Dallas to take on the Cowboys. So Arizona, if you're going to be a legitimate contender, you better get it figured out fast. We'll see if you can acquit yourselves much better this time with the national spotlight on you than you've been able to do in the two previous games against the Green Bay Packers and the Los Angeles Rams.
Cowboys with a little revenge there too. If I remember last year, the Dallas had to trot out Andy Dalton in that primetime matchup.
I don't even know if it was Andy Dalton, if it was Garrett Gilbert, if it was Cooper Rush or whoever it was. It was ugly right from the get-go, and I still have visions of Christian Kirk running right down the middle of the field multiple times against that Cowboys secondary.
I know we found ourselves on Dallas there. I do remember
that. We did, and that ticket made it into the circular file midway through the second quarter. So that's not what I will call a bad beat. I'll call it a bad bet, to say the least.
Yes, no doubt about that.
All right, want to head to Soldier Field for the traditional Monday Night Football time slot?
Yeah, not the best
Let's
game.
Do it.
Here we go.
Minnesota Vikings now out to a 6.5-point favorite at FanDuel Sportsbook. Totals ticked up a bit this morning. We're out to 45 right now at FanDuel. When you look at the Minnesota Vikings, we know how their season has gone. They've played 10 straight one-possession games. 10 of their 13 games this year have come down to the final play. Minnesota's offense has been dynamic and maybe doesn't get enough credit for how good they've been. They've scored 26-plus points in six straight games. It's now the longest streak in the National Football League. The problem being is your head coach is a defensive-minded guy, and the defense has allowed 20-plus points in eight straight games. When you look at the Vikings, if you've blindly bet them over the total since the start of the 2019 season, 28-16-1, the record that you've accumulated. Meanwhile, this is a series that's been relatively one-sided. The Bears have won 5 out of the last 6 meetings, and that may be the only good thing that Matt Nagy has done since he's taken over as head coach of the Chicago Bears. But no doubt, Payne, we'd be fools to try and handicap this game if we didn't discuss the players that will be absent for the Chicago Bears, most notably their entire starting secondary, it appears.
Right, there's a potential situation where, if not cleared in time, the Bears could operate tonight with 3 backup coordinators in each phase of the game as well, right? OC, DC, and special teams coordinator. Bears defensively, we've talked about how they've trended in recent times. It's not good, right? Obviously, some injuries along the defensive line. They haven't been able to stop the run. It's just a defense that is trending as one of the league's very worst, whether you're looking at efficiency or EPA. Now, all of a sudden, you're dealing with the cluster injuries in the secondary. And you're kind of left scratching your head, like, how are they going to stop Minnesota tonight? Now, obviously, Cousins has played horrifically in prime time. That's well documented. That's good, right? Just horrific. And even though you had Minnesota beat the Steelers last time out in prime time, Cousins played one of his worst games of the season. And you look at that game, he was pressured on 12 dropbacks. Had a 0 passer rating when pressured against the Steelers. Only 2 balls Cousins completed when he was pressured against the Steelers were to defenders. 2 picks, 0 completions when he was pressured. Cousins is also 1-9 on Monday night. So we're going to hear all of that narrative-based stuff for this when people are breaking it down. It's worth mentioning, but there's no excuses tonight, right? I mean, he's going to get his left tackle back, and Christian Darius out, looks like. The Bears get pressure at the fourth lowest rate in the league, despite blitzing at a league average rate. And then you hit this perfectly. Like, we thought at least some guys would play in the Bears secondary, and then at like 4 o'clock yesterday when we're all watching games, it slips out that Jalen Johnson, the Bears' top cover corner, and their starting safety, Tayshawn Gibson, also hit the big C list. So the only defensive backs on the Bears' active roster right now are a guy named Marquay Christian, Deion Bush, Tease Tabor. I believe he's a Florida Gator.
He is,
and then
indeed.
And then you got Kendall Vildor. Those are the only guys that are active at the time of this recording. Obviously, they're going to pull
Vildor
guys off
practice. Kendall Vildor sounds better as a Marvel villain than he does as a starting defensive back in the National Football League.
That's actually pretty good. So, and in time for Venom and Spider-Man that are in theaters right now.
Which apparently did a massive number, sub $600 million worldwide. Not in my wheelhouse, but simply incredible in this day and age to do that much on an opening weekend.
Yeah. That's bananas. So, you know, kind of gravitating back towards the game here, it's like prior to the entire secondary being out for the Bears, they were already dead last in the NFL in points per pass attempt allowed. And so it's only going to get worse. Sean Desai had actually been using Jalen Johnson as a shadow corner. So if Cousins doesn't like throw up on himself tonight, Justin Jefferson's probably going to have a pretty big game. There's also some whispers that Adam Thielen's going to test out his ankle pregame. I'm not going to speculate. I think if you were making a line on Thielen to play, you'd probably still make it an underdog that he goes. But he's going to test it pregame. And then the other interesting element of this defense, the guy that's kind of been the glue and held it all together, is Roquan Smith in the middle. He's really been like this stabilizing force. He re-aggravated his hamstring injury against Green Bay. He's been limited all week. And he has been the guy that's limited Dalvin Cook as a pass catcher. And if you look at Dalvin Cook in the five games that he's played against the Bears where Roquan Smith was there, he's averaging about 19.5 receiving yards. So Roquan Smith, if he's not 100% or tries to give it a go and exits after, you know, a possession or two because the hamstring won't hold up, or if he doesn't go at all, that's a big miss as well. I don't know if you want to touch on the other side of the ball quickly. I mean, this is really down to like just talking about some of the guys that are missing and then ultimately the price and where we think it's going to head.
Yeah, I mean, may as well. I honestly think instead of some of the X's and O's, talking about the price could probably make a little more sense, given we've seen money come in, obviously, on the Vikings, as anticipated when news broke late last week about the Bears dealing with issues. And, of course, the total at open 44 got as high as 46 before there was a little bit of resistance earlier today at a couple shops.
Yeah. I mean, here's what's interesting is we know the Bears put a ton of effort into Sunday Night Football against Green Bay, right? You could tell there was buy-in, right? Aaron Rodgers had embarrassed them earlier in the season. But if you've been doing some reading, this past Thursday, Jalen Johnson, who we've talked about and is out for this game, did a podcast. And he said, right now, our locker room has two factions. It's players who are still fighting hard, and then there's players who are in tank mode. And my guess is, well, you don't want to speculate, the guys that are in tank mode probably, here's my guess that we're going to see. You're going to see a lot of teams that are potentially out of the playoffs, I think, probably get impacted more by the bug and the virus than teams that are like fully head on with a mission statement for a Super Bowl, right? I mean, we kind of saw this coming into the season where like the Buccaneers were like, even though they've lessened protocols, we're going to follow the same protocols as last year, right? We saw the Colts. If you're watching Hard Knocks, they're the team that's in season, right? If you watch their meetings, all these guys have individual tables. They're all still 6 feet apart. They're all still wearing masks. This isn't to get into the COVID stuff, but I think you'll see like teams that are out of it, guys are going to be a little bit more willy-nilly. Anyways, the point is, Jalen Johnson said this.
How dare you take veiled shots at a guy like Allen Robinson like that?
Allen Robinson wants out of Chicago so badly. And he would have continued not playing had it not been for Justin Fields, who he really likes and gets along with. That him playing last week was like, hey, Justin Fields is our starter. My guess is if Andy Dalton was the starter last week, Allen Robinson would not have played. So you know, it's hard to kind of gauge this, but all of a sudden, like, you gave that full-blown effort last week and came up short. Now you're just kind of, like, riddled with guys missing. And you have one of your top players saying there's factions in the locker room. How motivated are you really, right? And we made this game right on the opener of, like, 3.5. And my understanding is, even though the line was showed no value, the Vikings were going to be the side regardless of everything that's transpired this week. Even if the Bears were, like, fully healthy, right, and didn't get hit with COVID, they were still going to be the side. Now we saw the Jalen Johnson news hit, where he is also out, and we saw this trend from, like, 6 to 6.5. I think we get to at least 7 at this point. That's where I think we're heading. And based upon some of the defensive issues with a bad Bears defense now decimated, the Vikings are going to be able to score some points here. And I think the other interesting element here is, and we'll have to monitor this, but we know Matt Nagy's been the guy calling plays. That's the reason the offense has looked, I'm sorry, not Matt Nagy, Bill Lazor has been the one calling plays. And that is why the offense has looked substantially better. Now, there's no real talent on offense, and that's why, like, you can only go to the trick bag so many times like he did against the Packers. But eventually, right, the defense starts preparing for the tricks, and you just can't win mano a mano, you know, in the third and fourth quarter. But we'll have to keep an eye on Bill Lazor, because it will be a little bit of a downgrade if he doesn't call plays. I think they'll go to DeFilippo in that situation. But there should be some opportunities for the Bears offense as well. And that's, again, why this is trending up a little bit, right? Like, you know, Justin Fields has talent, and he's flashed a couple times. He's mobile. He hasn't put, like, a full game together yet. And Mike Zimmer has certainly given rookie quarterbacks some trouble over his years. He's going to throw out a couple exotic blitzes up the middle that could present some trouble for a Bears offensive line that has issues protecting when Lazor doesn't stack the deck with multiple tight ends and backs to help in protection. But you kind of go into this game thinking, like, Justin Fields is going to have a complimentary ground game here, right? Like, Montgomery's shown pretty well against the Vikings. Minnesota, if you look, 26th in defensive rush efficiency on the season, 31st in defensive rush efficiency on first down. Now, they do get their starting defensive tackles back, and that should help their run defense, but it's not a great run defense by any stretch. Then you also have the Vikings' number one corner, Breshad Breeland, kicked off the team after an argument with the coaching staff, which turned physical Saturday afternoon. So the Vikings are also down their top cover corner. This game is a disaster. There's no doubt about that. But the over 43.5 that came in late last night was very sharp. Now, as you alluded to, Todd, one book got to 46. Did see some buyback there, but now we're looking at the sharpest shop in the world right now on game day, still dealing 46. So I do think the over was a real position, but again, it was at 43.5. 44 is very key. 45 obviously has some relevance as well. So that was the true position taken in this game on the over. A little bit different of a situation now at 46, but it wouldn't shock me if there's some points scored tonight relative to the total.
Yeah, one thing for the Vikings, their road to the playoffs got a little bit more difficult with the Saints outright upset against the Tampa Bay Bucks. So not a whole lot of wiggle room for Minnesota as they come into this game 6-7. They do have the tiebreak as things stand right now with an Eagles team who should most likely win their game against the Washington football team. And of course, Minnesota's schedule does them no favors. They'll bookend their final four games against the Chicago Bears, but sandwiched in the middle will be a home game next week against the Los Angeles Rams, a team trending up before they'll head to Lambeau Field. And you'd hope that maybe the Packers take their foot off the gas, although fighting for the number one seed at this point. I'm not quite sure that's in the cards either, despite having sealed up the NFC North with a few weeks left to go. All right, my friend. I know we have a number of games left to go. Tuesday football, a rare treat. You wish it wasn't under these circumstances, of course, and we'll see how games being moved this week will impact teams playing next week, especially with travel and the like. Safe to assume that we will keep our normal recording schedule and come back with NFL Week 16, usual time, usual place on Thursday?
Yeah. Same bat channel, same bat time. That's what we're doing. So because of how the holidays fell this year, like on the weekend, the travel schedule really doesn't get impacted. So NFL Week 16 on Thursday. We're thinking maybe next Monday off, we'll do the college football playoff preview on Tuesday the 28th, and then NFL, what would it be, Week 17 on the 30th? That's kind of how we're kind of envisioning the remaining schedule of the year 2021.
Yeah, we'll play this out. We'll keep you guys posted. And as always, it's why we encourage you to follow not only Pain on Twitter at Pain Insider or me on Twitter, but most importantly, the podcast feed at Bet the Board Pod. There'll be no Bet the Board pregame show this week. I know we sent out a couple of promotional things. Encourage folks that haven't already watched that. There's still great relevant information on all of those shows from some of our esteemed guests in Warren Sharp, the Crackman, and of course, Brad Powers, who offers up great insight on teams trending up and trending down for bull season. So we want to give back to all of you guys, our loyal listeners. Appreciate your continued patronage of this very fine podcast as we continue to grow in popularity. Hopefully you enjoyed a relatively rocking chair cover from the Indianapolis Colts on Saturday night. And Payne, any final words of wisdom, life advice you'd like to impart before we do this again on Thursday?
No. Chat with everyone on Thursday.
You got it. For all of you, our loyal listeners, regardless of how you choose to play, the Raiders and Browns, Vikings and Bears tonight, or the tandem of games tomorrow in the Seahawks, Rams, and Washington football team and Philadelphia Eagles, we wish you nothing but the best of luck, and hopefully we'll see you at the window.
Thanks for listening to Bet the Board. You can catch Todd and Payne every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday during football season, breaking down the biggest NFL and college football games. And to make sure you don't miss any free best bets, subscribe to Bet the Board on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.